Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
And welcome to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. Oh my gosh, you know, today is just, it's Friday again. And you know what I love most about Fridays is it's not the weekend, but the fact that it's another time we've gotten through in our lives. It's a feeling. Friday isn't a day, it's a feeling. It's when we kind of get to that point and we suddenly say to ourselves, you know something? I made it through another week. But there's an issue with that as well. Making it through isn't what we should do. It's not the race to the finish line here. Life is not a race. It's not a race to the finish line because the finish line isn't life, it's death. So I think what really is important is let's talk about the walk. Let's walk through our lives instead of running. We miss things. We lose relationships. We say things we shouldn't say because we get angry, because we're stressed, or because we're upset about something. And maybe sometimes we're taking that out on our pets. I've seen this a lot as a top canine behaviorist for God knows how many years. I mean, ever since 4-H when I was 8 years old, and you're talking, I'm no longer 8 years old. I've seen people, whether it's someone hitting a horse, even though they love the animal, they hit the horse because, or they kick it because it's not doing what they want, and they're not looking inside. I've seen people beating dogs, kicking dogs, shock collaring dogs, zapping them, pulling on them, poking them, kicking them, just getting angry. And it's not the animal's fault. It's generally your fault if you're doing that. Getting frustrated, to me, getting frustrated is a part of being human, and it's a part that we need to work on. Animals don't typically get frustrated, and if they do, what's the worst they do? They bark? They say, hey, my toy's stuck under the table or under the bed. I can't get my toy, or I'm hungry. But their wants and needs, much like an autistic or special needs kid. So why is it that we rush through life, but then we get angry when we rush through life and things don't go the way we want? Especially with dogs. I cannot tell you the number of COVID puppies that people have gotten. They have no idea whatsoever how to do that, how to take care of the dog, how to raise a puppy. They get frustrated. They yell, they scream. They give them away. And all you have to do is just think like a dog. Dogs and animals in general, horses too, really a lot more even, have an ability to change who we are. They have an ability to make us better. They have the ability to just see, to not have an ulterior motive, to not be angry. And yes, there are dogs and horses, but there are a lot of dogs out there who have bad genetics, and I get kind of tired of people saying, oh, any dog could be a service dog. You just got to teach them the right way. Or any dog could be the best pet in the world. Any dog could be. No, it's not true. There are some dogs, like there's some humans, that no matter what we do, genetics, okay, it's things we can't control, are going to be powerful. Aggression can be a very strong genetic component that disallows an animal from being able to function normally. Now, sometimes we can use medications, not Prozac. That's, you speak with your veterinarian, you do everything before you do Prozac, because with a fearful or uncertain dog, it can definitely make them worse. It can remove their inhibition, so they don't have the ability to prevent themselves from doing things that are in their brain, kind of like holding back something that you want to say, but you can't because you're in church or because you just would not be in your best interest. But there are animals that definitely have that. But let's pull all those animals out. Let's pull out the dogs who've been, the fighting dogs who've been fed gunpowder or lead shavings to try to make them crazy when they were puppies and all the way through even mothers nursing. Let's take all that out. Let's look at just your average normal dog. Let's say that it's a poodle mix, okay, and it's from there's none from good breeders, right? They're all people who are, unless it's somebody trying to make a new breed, and there are a few people trying to do that, and I have a bit of respect for them, at least they're trying to make a standard. But the vast majority of people out there breeding mixed breed designer dogs are just doing it for the money. They don't care, because if it's not you and you have a problem with that dog, my favorite thing is, oh, we give you a guarantee of 2 months, 6 months, a year on a genetic component. Well, if the dog makes it to 8 weeks of age, probably it's not going to surface yet, because you have genetic components typically, and congenital issues do not pop up till a bit later, so even up to two. There's bad hips. It's really hard to tell on a hit on a puppy, especially one of these designer puppies who has poor muscle tone anyway. You don't notice these things. Why would you x-ray a puppy's hips? Why would you x-ray his elbows unless it's a problem? And that doesn't usually happen until they're a bit older. But I think what the goal is here is to start teaching people more. When, you know, Merlin's kids, service dogs, we're on Facebook and we're all over the place. When we do things, and, you know, you always get some crazy lunatic who is pissed off you fired them after they have a criminal background, you find out. There's always that kind of situation. But if you look at just in general how dogs are and how people are, we notice that you get what you pay for. So if you, and I'm not talking about the amount of money, but don't go and buy something that's, you know, got somebody who's trying to make money off of it. I just had that with a lovely client of mine who had an 8-month-old white German Shepherd, and the guy, you know, who bred them breeds white German Shepherds, and the dog had a congenital issue, and now the guy refused to do anything, even though the puppy was 7 months old, and it died. I mean, it had a massive seizure or some kind of issue and literally died. The family didn't do anything wrong. Lovely family. Well, now I made them go to an AKC breeder of merit, a nice show breeder. They've got somebody, yes, they have to wait for the puppy a little bit, but they're getting a quality puppy that'll be guaranteed for at least 2 years. And a good breeder like myself, who breeds Grand Champion Show Dogs, is going to stand behind those puppies. So I encourage everybody, if you're looking for a pet, you know, look at standard poodles. If you're looking for a mix, look at a standard poodle from a show breeder, because those people care about what they're producing. If you have a problem, they're going to stand behind it. I've had German Shepherd breeders and other breeders of different breeds, when they have a problem with one puppy in a litter, especially German Shepherds with a weak nerve syndrome that can be a component of, unfortunately, some of them, especially if they're German Shepherd bred. And I had one breeder in New Jersey who literally saw me testifying as an expert witness in court. And she reached out to me and kind of pulled me aside pre-COVID, when you could touch somebody or be within 6 feet of somebody. And she said, I had a dog. I'm going to pay for the evaluation for the behavioral eval. But I'd like you to check all the other 9 or 10 dogs, whatever it was, in the litter to make sure that they're all okay. And it cost her a lot more than she probably got from those puppies. But she did the right thing. And she never bred that female again, and she never bred to that stud again. And now she's very careful, even more careful. But that's because she cares. Because a person who's breeding to better our breed, the people at Westminster, okay, people say, oh, the dogs live in cages all day long. That is not true. You don't get a dog in top condition by leaving it in a cage. They're in a crate. The same way as if you go to work, you put your dog in a crate, or you put your dog locked in the mud room or locked in the kitchen. A crate is a crate. Listen, you know, our bedrooms aren't gymnasiums. Dogs, most dogs are very okay and actually very comfortable in a crate. So if they have to be in a crate for, you know, a couple of days and they're out for hours at a time, what's the difference? Your kids do that. They lock themselves in their bedroom playing Minecraft or whatever it is. And they, you know, then they come out, they go to school, they go back in their crate. We do the same thing. What do you think a car is? That's just a moving crate. So stop thinking like that and start thinking about, maybe it's us, okay? Maybe you just don't know what to do with your new doodle thing, and it's a high energy dog, or your Aussie mix, because Aussies have enough energy, and you mix them with other things, they have even more energy. Instead of going out there and spending $2,000 to $5,000 and more to perpetuate somebody who's breeding garbage, why not go to a rescue? Do you know how many poodle rescues there are and mixed breed poodle rescues and all these different places out there? You know, the shelters are pretty empty, but there's a lot of dogs out there still because people who shouldn't have had a dog in the first place went out and got a dog, and a lot of them are poorly bred. Well, I mean, most of the mixes are poorly bred, but, you know, you get lucky. You get about 75% of them. F1s are usually fine. 25% have issues. You go to an F2, which some people call an F1B. It's an F2. F is a filial generation. So first filial generation is what is person A has a baby with person B, and baby is C. Baby C and then a brother or a close relative have babies, and then that's D, have baby E. So what happens is it's a 75% or more kickback is what they call an F1B, but it's really an F2. F1s are those healthy mutts that we knew as kids. F2s, and when you get to F3s, are really a problem. And that's why people have to keep, you know, constantly adding other types of bloodlines in so that it doesn't get too inbred. So if you want a dog, don't keep patronizing people who are just breeding to make money. Go to a rescue. You can rescue probably even a puppy poodle mix or beagle mix or whatever the heck it is that you want. And you won't be spending that kind of money. And those places and most people or many people in rescue are really good. You have the crazies because nobody in rescue gets along. That's why they all start their own new rescue because I can do it better. And instead of, you know, hooking up with a good rescue that already exists and helping them because they can do more, they have more contacts, they have more ability, they have more donations. So, you know, your goal should be, your goal should be to get a good dog or to get a dog that you can have a good behavioral team help you. Most of the rescues will help. I'm behaviorist for over 200 rescues and shelters around the country and actually around the world. I have a number of them in different countries and we can Zoom and I do go down there periodically or work with the people by Zoom so that we can work together. But the key is stop buying puppies from these puppy mill breeders who are just breeding garbage. And, you know, you say, oh, that's not nice to say, you know, call the dog garbage. Yeah, genetically it's garbage. I think all dogs are great. I love all dogs, even dogs that have bitten me because I fixed them. But you can get something great, keep the $3,000 or $4,000 in your pocket, and then hire somebody locally. Just get yourself a local obedience trainer who's knowledgeable. Or, you know, just make sure that they're not going to use shock collars and don't send your dog away. If you're going to send your dog away, then would you send your child away to somebody you didn't know? And don't look at, oh, look, they have 8 5-star reviews. Well, yeah, I have a lot of relatives. Well, I don't have relatives now, but I'm sure if I asked people, oh, yeah, just put a 5-star review. You can do that. That's what the problem is with all these reviews online. You know, you can have somebody who doesn't like you or somebody who's, you know, an old maid and has never been married and, you know, is jealous of everything you do. And you can be, you know, the best person in the world and doing good things. And you're going to have that person who's going to always write a bad comment. So I don't even look at reviews online. I go by when I speak with people who have used somebody and they tell me that personally. That to me is more important because when somebody comes in and says to me, hey, Janice, you know, I got your name from so-and-so who got your name from so-and-so, or I saw you on the mom's page or whatever. That to me is more important because you know 2 or 3 or 4 people who had great experiences with me. And if you had one that didn't, you wouldn't be calling me. So that's a really great thing to do. And the same thing if you do want to get a puppy or you do want to get an older dog, which are so much easier than puppies, you don't have to go through all the puppy stuff, but if you, you know, think about it and you go to a rescue and you have a good experience and they, you know, took the dog back or they helped you, then that's somebody you want to go back to. You don't want to just go and find like, oh, look, I found the cheapest mixed breed designer doodle thing that I could get. And guess what? They said they'll take it back if there's a problem in the first couple of months. As soon as you have that dog for a week, that dog's not going back. So for them to say, oh, you return the dog and we'll give you your money back, they are not going to, you're in a million years, unless you have no heart, you are not going to give that dog back. So it's a useless guarantee because they know that they're not going to give you the dog back. You're not going to, are you going to give a dog back, a little puppy back? No way. Your kids are going to let you do that? No way. So what it amounts to is being a smart buyer, smart consumer, and getting your behavioral team before you start, before you get the puppy. I was just in a couple days ago, actually on Wednesday, with an adorable dog, with a lovely lady named Summer, and her husband, and the little dog's name is Snow. And I said to her, I said, you might want to change the name. And she said, but I like the name Snow. I said, but you're going to say no or Snow, and the dog is going to hear no, and it's going to be very confusing. And she thought, oh my gosh, I never would have thought of that. I'm like, yeah. So you can call her, you know, something else. You can keep the name, but you know, maybe make it Snowy or something like that, or call her something else because it's going to be confusing. So just with that one, now that one she got from somebody who breeds, I don't know what it is, English sheepdog mixed with poodle. Adorable, like off the wall, adorable. But I know from a couple of the other, actually three of the other people who got puppies from them, that the other two particularly were both kind of uncertain and fearful and went through a wicked fear phase. And the other one is, you know, chasing people down the street, basically, if you let them, but is fine in certain situations. So you can say, all right, do you have that same thing? No, she was smart. She said, you know what? This is what I really like. I know somebody who was happy. I mean, the dogs are healthy. That's one thing. Thank God they came. They were clean. They looked good. They were in good weight. I think just one of the four had Giardia and Coccidia, which, yeah, it happens. You know, mine don't have it, but I'm super careful. But the average person might have a puppy that has, especially Coccidia, which they get from nursing from the mom. But the dog should have two series of shots by that age, by the time you get them at 12 weeks, although most of the places that breed them, you know, the designer dogs you can get at 7 or 8 weeks. You know, it's just going to be kind of a catch-as-catch-can. But my point being, this young lady said, this is my first dog I'm having on my own, and I want a behaviorist to start with so we know what to do. And that dog, even though it's the same genetics as the others, when that fear phase hits and when she has issues, we're going to be able to resolve those issues as she's going. So she doesn't have to have any of these repetitive behaviors imprinted in the dog. And then the dog is, you know, suddenly going to be, you know, having all these other issues that we could have fixed. So because we will be fixing it as we go. So a lot of this really gets back down to understanding how a dog thinks and understanding that we as the humans and we as the owners need to consider that the most important part of this, besides genetics, which is to me the most important part, but the next most important part is raising the dog with consistency and rules. If I ask people all the time, what happens to you if you're driving and you run a red light or run a stop sign? And there are four basic answers. One is, well, did anyone see? And that's a bad one because that means you're not thinking about it being right or wrong or the consequences. You're just worrying about, is somebody going to see you do it? That's like, ooh, there's money laying there. Is somebody watching? You shouldn't be asking that. You should be saying, pick it up and find who it belongs to. So the first thing is anyone watching? The second thing is, if I ask you, what would you do, you know, what would happen if you ran a red light? They'd say, well, you know, the cops will give you a ticket, as they should. Another one is, I could get hurt or get in an accident. That's a third one. And that's not the way I think. I think the fourth way, which is, I could hurt or kill someone, and I could never live with that. Okay, unless the person were a danger to me, you know, or something like that. But obviously that's different. But I'm talking about driving. So think about that with a dog. You want to have consistency with that dog. You shouldn't be thinking, I don't want this dog to hurt somebody because I'm going to get sued. You shouldn't be thinking, well, if nobody sees or we don't care, it's okay with us if the dog does whatever it is. Or even, well, you know, we'll keep him inside because he doesn't like children or other animals. So those are all really not good answers. What it should be is raise your pet, raise your dog with consistency and rules. The rule is you don't jump on people. The rule is you don't bark at people. The rule is you don't bite people. The rule is I go through doors before you and you have to move out of my way, not out of fear ever, not out of intimidation ever, but you have to move because I'm in charge. I'm protecting you. I'm providing for your needs and you've got to move out of my way because I can't worry about, God forbid, hurting you because I bump you out of the way. You need to move because I'm doing that providing and protecting. So that's where this whole thing really starts out. So how do you give your dog that clarity? And how do you, if you have a puppy, or if you've rescued a puppy or adult dog, I call all dogs puppies, then what is it exactly that sets apart a dog with bad genetics becoming a good dog or becoming a dog with bad genetics and bad behavioral issues or bad physical issues? It's what you do with that. So for instance, somebody throws a ball to you. You have choices, right? You can hit it out of the park. You can barely touch it. You can bunt it. You can, you know, maybe get hit by it and try to get walked. There are a lot of different things, right? Football's coming toward you, right? You got the, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes, one of my faves, of course, Tom Brady. That was a great game. Well, wasn't great for one team, but it was great. Watching Age Before Beauty. But anyway, the idea being, if somebody throws you a perfect spiral to your breadbasket and you decide because you're having a bad day, you don't feel like catching it, he's not a great quarterback anymore. So there's a lot of give and take, a lot of back and forth, and families have to be involved. You can't say, well, it's not my dog, so I'm not going to take care of it. So those of you who are intimidating family members or coercing each other into getting a dog, if you're not planning to take care of that dog completely, then don't get the dog because it's not fair to the dog, because that dog is going to end up potentially in, you know, in a bad situation. So what we want to do is make sure that, A, everybody is, you know, working together. Everybody is on the same page. We're going to be raising the puppy in this way. We're all going to be respecting each other, making sure that all the things that we're doing are for the best benefit of the dog. So if you get a puppy and you say, well, I don't have time to walk it, and then you get mad because the dog is, you know, peeing all over the house, then, you know, that's not the dog's problem. But people will get mad at the dog, chastise the dog, hit the dog, punish the dog. The dog can't control what it's got. Okay, this morning, my beautiful Bella, who's thankfully back to me, and although she had to have surgeries and all kinds of tens of thousands of dollars to get her back after her trauma and neglect where she was. But after I got her, like this morning, she was so cute, and she started dancing around like a little toddler who has to go to the bathroom. So I quickly got her out, and I thought to myself, wow, if I hadn't been in the room and heard her whine, I would have known I should have taken her out before I left. But how many people would have taken that exact situation and would have gotten mad at the dog because, you know, here it is, right? The dog might have pooped or peed in, you know, in her enclosure because she's still got a cone on from another surgery, yet another surgery she needed to have. For her neglect. But thinking about it for a moment, how many of you guys, especially people with new puppies, how many of you would have gotten mad at the dog? You shouldn't be getting mad at the dog. Do you know that a puppy can only hold its urine for approximately 1 hour for every month old it is. So if you have a four-month-old puppy, it cannot go 8 hours during the day. A lot of times puppies can go longer at night because they're sleeping, but make sure you're not giving them water all through the night, because if they drink, they're going to have to empty it out, kind of like if you have coffee. You might have to be in the bathroom in an hour or two or whatever it takes your body to process. So if you're going to get angry at the dog because your schedule doesn't allow you to get back there to let the dog out or to take him out, then you're not ready for a puppy. And that's where a great option is an older dog. And we're going to talk about good options for rescue dogs in the next half of the show. So I think what I'm trying to get through to you guys is, accept responsibility. Don't just insist on, like, I got to get a puppy because it's so cute, and I got to make sure that it doesn't get messed up, because, of course, you're a professional dog behaviorist, right? So you know everything. And just remember, every dog in a rescue or shelter that was owned by somebody and given up, almost every single one was given up because they knew how to train a puppy, and they don't. It's not as easy as you think. Some dogs are just going to be easy and they're going to follow through and be great. And some of them are really terrible. And you never, never know what it's going to be. So what I'm saying to you is, think about your situation and consider maybe an older dog. Go to one of these rescues. They have doodle rescues, you know, for doodles, or, you know, beagle, pug, or whatever kind of combinations. You can look them up. And a lot of times, unfortunately, and even when you go and buy a dog from a quote-unquote breeder, they'll tell you what it is. You never really know. I mean, to me, and I can tell every breed by AKC, and most of the breeds that are even not AKC recognized, I know what dogs look like. Honest to God, I can't tell the difference other than color between a Bernese Mountain Dog mix and a party color poodle, you know, lots of mix, or whatever it is. They all look alike, other than maybe minor things in size. So they're all the same. So if you say, oh, I only want a mini Labradoodle or mini Golden Doodle, whatever, just look up poodle mixes. Don't go and give somebody money to keep making designers, you know, science experiments. And you'll get yourself a good dog, or whatever you would have had anyway, but you'll be saving all that money that you won't be wasting on a puppy, and you won't be perpetuating people breeding these puppy mill dogs or the Amish. And, you know, some of them are terrible. Some are great. I mean, there's some Amish people who do the right thing, but there's also a lot that don't. And don't say, like, oh, look, they have a health guarantee. They'll give you your money back if anything happens with the dog. Right, but you're not going to give the dog back, so it's an empty guarantee. That's ridiculous. It's just not going to happen. So we'll talk more about that in the second half of the show. And I'm really glad you're with us again. And we're going to take a little break for a moment, so stay tuned, because we'll be right back. And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, thank you all for being with me and for hanging in there when I rant and I get on my tirades. But you know one thing, I am blunt. And one of the things that I think is really bugging me lately is all these COVID puppies that people are just going out and spending thousands of dollars on mutts. I want to go through to explain to everybody why grand champion show dogs that are shown in the ring go to Westminster, you know, are basically challenged or challenging all the other dogs of their breed for perfection, for longevity, for movement, for soundness, for structure, for function. I want to explain a little bit about that. And I've done a little bit of that before, but I really want to get into it. So you're breeding, let's say, Grand Champion Reducing Ridgebacks. Okay. I know. I do that. Oh, okay. Good. I'm an expert on that. I've been doing this for, I don't know, 38 years, 39. I don't know. It's a long time. So let me kind of go into what costs money. So imagine when you have a litter of puppies, right? You think of, well, okay, what does it cost you know, to keep the mom while she's pregnant, right? And, you know, have her on top food. So maybe that's a few bucks a day, and the vitamins and supplements. Let's call it a few bucks a day. Let's call it, oh, progesterone checks. You might have, well, I think with this one, we did 7 or 8 progesterone checks. They're about $130, $140 a piece. So let's call that $1,000 over the course of a couple of weeks of checking progesterone. And then we have food, let's say, is, let's call it $100 a month, which is a lot more than that, but let's call it $100 a month for 2 months that the dog is pregnant, which is really 9 weeks, 63 days. Typically, so let's just say that, okay, we've got that. So how much is that? It's not that much money. But let's just say, you know, what else goes into that? Oh, wait, formula. I just bought tons of formula. I'm going through a $60 can every 2.5 days, a $60 can of formula, because I've got 9 growing puppies and mom isn't able to support them. Oh, forget about my time that I have to actually stay home and not work and make sure I'm home with the puppies. Forget about that. If, you know, how much I charge to be as a top behaviorist, and forget about that. Let's just take all that money, that opportunity cost. So let's cancel all my clients that I can do 2 or 3 a day every day, and at a very nice return for the families and quality. But let's forget about that. Let's just talk about that. Now, how much did it cost me to send my dog out to show? Well, it's about $125, $150 plus expenses. So I call it $200 a show. So let's just say Kira right now. Kira is, like, I think 11 points from her gold grand championship, which is pretty cool. So it sounds impressive. Okay, well, let's talk about what does it take if you're getting a handler to go to a dog show. It's, let's say, $125, $150 plus expenses of travel and all for the handler. So let's say you go to 4 shows. Let's say it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday show. So you go to the show, and there's right there 4 times $200. So let's say $800 plus about $30 to $40, usually closer to $40 for each of the 4 shows, and another $160. And let's say there's, you know, whatever extra little things you have in there. So let's say for a 4-day show is going to be, you know, roughly $1,000. Let's call it $1,000 for 4 days. So, all right, that's like, wow, you say that's a lot of money. Okay, good. So how many shows do you win? Now, my dogs typically go out, they win, if not every time, they win almost every time. So I'm going to say, as the best case scenario, use my stuff versus somebody who gets a dog that really shouldn't be showing and winning. A dog who doesn't win, after a while, you stop showing. And nobody wants to breed to a dog that isn't a champion or hasn't at least gotten, you know, we're talking in the show realm, isn't a good quality dog or it has a problem. The other thing is you see every flaw, because sometimes you're on inside surfaces. Sometimes you're outside on an uneven ground. You see every blip. You see every mark on the dog. You see every stance that the dog takes. You see how it moves. You watch it intimately. You see if it snaps at a judge or another dog, or if somebody's keeping it intentionally too close because they know the dog has a bad temperament. People around the ring, the show people like me, we watch that. And if I see a dog that they bring it in, they bring it right out, and they keep its head very tight against them, I'm not going to breed to that line, because I don't want to have a dog who's going to be like that. I want a dog who's friendly enough to be around other dogs, maybe not one that's, you know, in their face, but I want a dog who's going to be friendly enough. So let's just say, the shows, you need 15 points to get a championship in AKC, which is really the only one. UKC does for rarer breeds and all, but let's just say AKC, which is the standard for purebred dogs. So an AKC show dog, in order to get a championship, needs 15 points. Now, you can only get, even if you're the top, even if you win best in show, as we've done before, winning group, breed, whatever, the most you can get is 5 per show. And you've got to have under at least 2 different judges. You need 2 majors. So it's hard, because sometimes there can be 20 or 30 dogs, 40, 50, 60 in my breed. So to win, And to get those points, it's tricky. Now, you got to have a dog with temperament. You've got to have the dog with movement, the body, the all the physical aspects as well. So to get 15, for me, I mean, we can finish in 2 weekends. But you can really imagine if your dog isn't a good quality, you could spend 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and never get a championship because the dog either doesn't, even though it's a beautiful dog, it doesn't have the temperament to show. So let's say you get your championship. Now you go for your grand championships. That's 25 grand champion points. Now, 25 points, you have to have at least 5 shows. If you won every single breed, you'd still have to, or opposite, or select, you'd still have to have, most of your events need to be champions defeated. So if there's only you and you win, it doesn't count as a champions defeated. So in other words, you can't have just winning against class dogs. You have to win against other champions. And that's the whole thing. So that's 25 points. So let's say you win 5 times. When we're saying the bare minimum, let's say just 5 times, you win every single time. You go up. Now you've got a championship. Now you've got a grand championship. What's next? A bronze grand championship. That's 100 additional points. So now you have to go, so 100 points, just think about it, 100 points to do that. So if we did, we call it $1,000 for 4 shows. So let's say we did 3 shows to get our championship. So let's call that $700. Let's say our grand championship 5, so let's call that $1,300, so that's $2,000 if you win every single show, which doesn't happen with most people. So now it's $2,000, okay, plus remember you have entry fees. Now your bronze grand championship is 100 points, so that's a minimum of 20 shows, assuming you won every single show. That's, so let's say 20 shows times, we're calling it $250, or let's call it $200 a show. So that's $4,000 to get your bronze grand championship, assuming you win every single time. And then your silver is $200. So that's $200. So that's going to be $8,000. And a gold grand championship, which is what my one dog is just at right now, just underneath, a gold grand championship is 400 points. So 400 times, let's call it 200, even though it's more, 200 plus the champion points. So let's say that's how many shows? 80 shows if you win every single show. That's 80 shows at $2,000, $200 or $250 each. So that's, think about that. That's another 16,000. So you can easily put 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80,000, $100,000 into campaigning a dog. Now, let's just say it's a female, like my Kira. She may have one litter. Now, am I going to be able to charge $20,000 or $10,000 a puppy to recoup my money? Heck no. So I'm not doing it to make money. I'm doing it for the love of the fancy, the love of the breed, the love of the sport, and I'm making my dog better and better. I don't want to spend that kind of money on a dog who's not good because I'm never going to get there. So it's kind of a self-culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G, self-culling sport. If you're not good enough, if your dog's not good enough or it doesn't have the temperament, you don't do well, so you don't continue. Now, you can see how much that is, and we're not even talking stud fees. We're not talking about vet bills that are being incurred for the life of the dog. We're not talking about all the food for the entire life of the dog. We're not talking about all the other things and expenses that you have for the dog. So you could easily put $100,000 into a show dog, easily, probably a lot more, insurance, everything else. And we're not going to make money. That's not why we do it. So we care about, if you're not happy, we care about not breeding garbage. We will breed the best of the best. And yes, there's always someone who's breeding purebred dogs, but they're not showing. If you're not showing, you know, not that it doesn't mean you have good dogs, but it's a different level. You're showing because you're showing, basically showing off the quality of your dogs to your peers, which are the people who are going to be potentially wanting to breed to your stuff. So let's say we're doing that, and we've got $100,000 in, like, probably with Kira, I've easily got that in. So let's say it's $100,000. How many litters would I have to recoup $100,000. So let's say the puppies are, let's call them $3,000 a piece, okay? Not the $5,000 or $4,000 that they're charging for these poodle mixes and other things that have nothing behind them. We're just saying with a show dog, okay? So let's say we've got the show dog and we're saying, yeah, okay, I've got $100,000 in. So I would have to have 33 puppies. So I'd probably have to have four litters just to barely break even. But the litters themselves are the vet bills, the progesterone, the food, your time, the training, the, you know, making sure, checking people out to make sure that they're good, going to be good owners. Never shipping to someone you've never met, important. Never selling over the internet, important. If you buy a dog and you've never met the breeder personally or seen that dog before you get it, that is a problem. That's a puppy mill. I don't care who it is. If somebody, can you imagine adopting a child that you never met? Can you imagine marrying someone you've never met? And I know that happens, so we don't have to talk about it. I know that happens. But can you imagine that? It's just a terrible, terrible feeling that, you know, here you are buying something that you've never met. You don't know if it's going to be good or healthy or you're going to like it. You're going to buy a picture. It's ridiculous, and especially with photoshopping, and you can take a good or bad picture. So what I'm telling you is look for some place near you that you can meet the people, unless you've already had, you know, you've already had a dog from the place and you've had good success. That's another story. But still, let's talk about it. So now we know how much it costs to have a show puppy. And remember, that's the female. That's not talking about all the expenses, the male that I've also had, right? Showing, checking every female for Brucella, checking every female, you know, to make sure they have nothing. It's all the vitamin supplements. Checking the male to make sure they have no diseases, making sure, you know, that they're healthy and sound. Now, on the other hand, let's talk about mixed breed designer disasters. I'm sorry. Let's talk about mixed breed dogs. So a mixed breed dog does not have $80,000 into it for showing. It does not probably, I didn't even go into hips, elbows, thyroid, bear, surf, genetic tests and all that that we do on all of our show dogs. So it doesn't have genetic testing, so that costs zero. It's probably subpar garbage food that's cheap, okay? Vet, when we need it for rabies, they give their own shots instead of having a veterinarian do it, and it's a lot more expensive to have a vet. These shots can be $1 up to $10 maximum, but usually about $1 to $2 per shot. So if I go to a vet and I get those shots, it's going to be $120 to $150 for puppy vaccines for the one round. But if I go to Agway or someplace down the road and I get it and I stick the little label onto the little puppy health record, it looks all impressive and all. But I don't even know if that thing's been refrigerated. You don't know if it's valid. And most veterinarians will not count any vaccinations that a breeder gave themselves. So that tells you something, they're not going to count it. But that leads to over-vaccination because we don't trust when somebody says, you know, somebody who's a puppy mill is, you know, how do you trust them that they gave shots, right? So you give them extras. And if they did give the shots, then it over-vaccinates the puppy, causes issues and autoimmune things. And if they gave a shot that doesn't have any, you know, any validity to it because it's not a, it hasn't been treated, handled properly, then your puppy's getting no protection whatsoever, which is why a lot of puppies that are quote-unquote vaccinated are still coming down with parvo or other diseases that they've supposedly vaccinated for. So other than rabies, which is state mandated that every state that rabies must be done by a veterinarian, and thank God for that. So think about it for a minute. Now, what are the expenses? Okay, you got a rescued toy poodle that was from a puppy mill. So you use that male for everything because no good toy poodle breeder is going to sell you a dog and allow you to breed mutts with it. So whatever. Let's say you spent $1,000 to get this little toy poodle or you lied and got it from whatever local yokel breeder was breeding them. So now you have this garbage bred, sorry about that, puppies, but poorly bred poodle. Toy poodle, and you just go breed it to whatever you can get. So you go and get a golden or a English sheepdog or a, you know, I don't know, what, Aussie or whatever you do, and you breed the toy poodle to the poorly bred Aussie or whatever other dog that you got at a pet store. And now you breed those two together. You have genetic, just like basically a genetic mess, kind of like your favorite chocolate ice cream mixed with pizza, mixed with sushi, mixed with Frank's hot sauce. And, you know, you say, like, mix it all together in a blender and drink it, you'd be sick. Well, that's kind of what these things are. They become genetic, kind of genetic freaks. And it's sad because somebody's going to get stuck with that dog and they're going to love it because they're a good person. But the dog is going to be genetically predisposed to the same thing that you can imagine because it's poorly bred. And breeding is everything. Breeding is probably more like 80% than 50%. And it might even be a little higher than that sometimes. So let's just talk about that. So what expenses do you have? Some cheap food, the vet once in a while. You're not doing health checks. And if you are, you know, I don't know, if you're doing a DNA thing, that's like $100 or $120. But probably they're not. So you're ending up with something that is being, the only reason you're paying that much money is because there are a lot of people out there right now who are looking at it and saying, oh, I want the latest and the newest. It's not good. It's, you know, I want this one. I want this color. I want that. And the funny part is a lot of the poodles with the phantom collar are used. So you use a phantom poodle and like you get a Bernese Mountain Dog mix. And almost always the tricolor part isn't on them anymore after they get older. So now you have a dog who was supposed to be a color that isn't a color, or a dog that's not whatever hypoallergenic is supposed to mean, or a dog that has some other issue. So, you know, you were looking at what expenses does a breeder, a backyard breeder or a puppy mill have? There's no show breeding. There's no genetic test. There's no being careful to breed one to another. You don't even know. You could be buying something, and probably are, buying something that is its own cousin, it's its own parent. You know, I've seen that where you take, like, the one place has, like, 60 or, I don't know, 48 or 60, I don't remember, but a lot, around 48 to 60 females, and they have, like, three males. Do you think, and of course, you can't just keep breeding them, you think that the same male hasn't been, like, it sired one, a female, and then it's bred to the female again? You're going to tell me you don't think there's a complete inbreeding in most of these people, especially the puppy mills and these backyard breeders who are trying to make money? They don't care. If it looks cute and fluffy and they get rid of it before they have to put any money into it, they're making money hand over fist because of people's stupidity. Because you should be saying, why is it that this dog costs $3,000 when there's no money going into it? You're just making money. It's their income, okay? And that's why you have to be smart and not just go and buy a dog, but go and look and check into some of these rescue groups. There's some very good rescues out there with good people, good-meaning people that are going to say, hey, listen, this dog has a temperament issue, which a lot of them do. This dog has megaesophagus. This dog has this congenital issue or that congenital issue. I see a lot of things, neural tube deformities, where you'll see the nose is a little bent and maybe the vulva or the entire urogenital system can be a little bit like bent off to the side. That means that everything inside is probably also that way. So there are a lot of issues that can happen because of the poor genetics. But why are you paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for a mutt, but yet you complain about paying $3,000 or $2,500 for a Grand Champion show dog who is raised by a breeder who's been breeding for 35 or 40 years? You know why? Because, well, it's not as cute. It's not the hottest item. So let's stop being stupid. Let's start going out there, being smart. Let's stop buying garbage at all that. And then, you know, let me know how you make out. You can email me actually, through the website, through BBS Radio, and you can get our information. We're happy to help. I do want to just remind everybody to be safe. This is a really hot week across the country for whatever reason. We're getting into Memorial Day, which it seems like that always happens. So make sure you don't leave your dog outside, without being attended to. Make sure your dog has plenty of water and has shade, because even though it's only May, a 75 or 80 degree day is way too hot for a dog to be outside in the sun, even if he wants to be in the sun. It's like little kids love to eat junk food, but doesn't mean that it's good for them. So I'm going to ask everybody, make sure, and please, dear God, please do not leave your dog in the car. If you do, there's a great temperature sensor. I have one in each of my cars, and it actually senses the temperature. You can set it for high or low, and it's almost like a kind of like a Furbo kind of an idea, where it actually will remotely let you know if there's a problem, if the temperature gets too high. In the absence of that, leave your door, obviously your windows open enough, but leave your door open so that, God forbid, the dog is in distress. Somebody doesn't have to break your window. And let me tell you, a lot of times people will actually break your window anyway if they see, that there's a dog in there, which you really shouldn't do. So anyway, it's just our time to finish up today. A lot of it is just make sure you take good care of yourself, make sure you're hydrated, make sure dogs are hydrated, keep an eye on your dogs to make sure that they're urinating and defecating normally. If a dog vomits, just make sure that they don't become dehydrated. Check them, make sure they haven't ingested anything. We're starting to get to that time where there are also mushrooms growing. And there's a lot of also stuff that you should be working on right now. So I guess we're going to have to go because, oh, man. And, we're going to talk again next week. And let's see what else we can work on. And please do email and let us know. You can actually reach out to us at info@united9pros.com. If you need help with your dog, you can also do the great thing of either email that or you can reach out to us on the website. We will be happy to help you. You can call 855-449-9288, which is 855-HI-WYATT, and we'll be happy to help you with your dog situation. If you do have a dog with an issue, if you're looking to train your dog as a service dog, we do that as well. Even if you have your own dog, we can do that to help you. But it's always great to be here, and I wish everybody a good, happy, healthy, safe weekend. Start enjoying being outside and kind of getting back to the life we used to know a year and a half ago. Enjoy your summer. Be safe with your dog. Be safe with your kids. Make sure you are hydrated, and we will talk much, much more. Have a great weekend, and stay safe.